A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 38. Chob. Boba kept Din in his bed until well past sun's high. Not that Din argued with him or tried too hard to leave the warm circle of Boba's arms, but still. Din wasn't sure that he'd ever let himself be so lazy before, so indulgent. So willing to let Boba do whatever he wanted with Din in his bed and his arms, despite all that awaited them in the palace below. But Din was willing to stay and laze around. Very willing, as it turned out. And together he and Boba passed the most indulgent, lazy morning Din thought that he'd ever had. After getting himself off between Din's thighs, Boba got Din off too, slowly, settling Din in his lap and tugging at Din's cock with an oil-slick hand until Din had shuddered his way through an orgasm, choking on a cry of pleasure. Din had expected Boba to let him go after that, to herd Din into the fresher to clean up and prepare to face the rest of the day. But Boba hadn't. By the time Boba was finally groaning and levering himself up off the bed, which was now thoroughly wrecked, the sheets tacky and rumpled, Boba had made Din come twice more, once with his mouth and once by fucking Din with just his fingers, pressing relentlessly against a bundle of nerves somewhere inside of Din that made Din's toes curl and his vision flash white and black. Din and Boba were both as wrecked as the bed. Boba managed to stand first, stretching languidly like a satisfied predator. The early afternoon suns made him glow. His cheeks were rough with stubble, and his scars looked softer, bathed in golden sunlight like this. They looked less fearsome. Din, for his part, felt like his limbs were made of Malifa honey. He could barely convince himself to get up. When he finally managed it and lurched out of bed, groaning, Boba had to help him to his feet, chuckling when Din's legs wobbled underneath him, and propped Din up as they made their way to the fresher. Din glared. "This is your fault," he said, his voice cracked and rough. Din had returned Boba's favor, of course. It hadn't seemed right to Din, letting Boba get him off again and again without returning the favor. Boba had been more than happy to have Din's mouth on his cock again. Din had liked it, too. He'd liked it almost more than the feeling of Boba's fingers moving inside of him, working him loose and open. Din had gotten the same sort of bright, sparking pleasure from the weight of Boba's cock against his tongue that he'd gotten from Boba's fingers. Boba caught the rasping quality in Din's voice and grinned, quick and flashing. "I do good work," he said. Din couldn't help but snort. "Mesheb," he said. He took a tentative step towards the fresher. His legs held. Though Din could feel the strain in his thighs, the faint burn of each of his individual welts and cuts. Boba watched Din for a moment, a hand out to catch Din if he stumbled, but Din made it the rest of the way into the fresher on his own. "You can take the sonic first," Boba told him, following close behind. "I'm gonna ring down for something to eat. First meal's over and done with, but there should still be something edible for us in the kitchens. Need anything from downstairs?" Din shook his head, relieved that he'd have the sonic to himself. It wasn't that he didn't enjoy crowding into it with Boba. Even when they used the sonic as it was intended, Din liked how close together he and Boba got. He didn't mind knocking elbows and knees. But now Din was covered in dried sweat and flaking bacta and worse. He wanted to get clean. If he and Boba crowded into the sonic together, Din knew that they wouldn't be able to keep their hands off each other. "I'll be quick," Din promised. Boba waved a careless hand and took over the sink while Din climbed into the sonic. He wasn't half as much mess as Din, though Boba did have his fair share of sweat and oil tacked to his skin. Din turned the sonic up to its highest setting, gritting his teeth as the frequency rattled around inside of his skull and cleaned up as best he could. He heard Boba splash around in the sink for a few seconds and then leave the fresher entirely. The sweat and oil came off easily enough. Din let the vibrations wash over him. His skin tingled. Now that he was alone, Din gave himself a handful of seconds to examine the backs of his legs as best as he could. There was a dented mirror hanging above the sink that would probably give Din a better view, but Din didn't want to leave the privacy offered by the sonic. "I want to see what Bubba did," he thought, twisting his head around to look. What he saw made his mouth dry out. The backs of Din's legs, from just behind his knees up to the swell of his ass, almost to the small of his back, were a bright, angry red. Welts were stacked up one on top of the other like bands of red sandstone. The welts weren't particularly thick, which surprised Din. They hurt, ached, burned, and the pain of them had made Din assume that they were thicker, more expansive. The thickest was only half an inch wide, and Din could tell from the color of it that Bubba had struck the same place two or three times. Most of the other welts were thinner. They took up less of Din's legs than he thought that they would. The longest were maybe 4 or 5 inches, though some of the welts had been broken across both of Din's legs. A few had turned purple overnight, their healing sped up by the thick layers of Bacta that Bubba had slathered on two or three times now. Knowing Bubba, he'd put another layer on before he would let Din armor up for the day. Maybe he'll let me keep a few of them at least, Din thought. His heart began to beat faster. Din reached down and pressed a thumb to the edge of one welt, one of the longer ones that crossed Din's upper left thigh. He hissed. The skin was hot and tender. Din could feel his heartbeat thumping there too, beating against the pad of his thumb. This welt was one of the ones that had split open. The cut had been shallow and was now well on its way to healing over, the scab thick and sturdy against the edge of his thumb. Din probably wouldn't even have a scar when all of the healing was done. But Din could still feel the cane, the memory of it, the sound of it hissing through the air, the feeling of his skin splitting open, blood trickling down to drip onto the floor. Before he could change his mind, Din pressed down on the welt and the memory flared white-hot behind his eyes. He hissed again. His cock, which should have been spent already, gave another interested twitch. Din took his hand away, heart thumping. The pain lingered. The skin around the welt was redder now, flush and sore. It throbbed like a second heart. Din took a deep breath and made himself look away. "Not now," he thought. "I can't. Not now. But maybe later." Maybe later, in the privacy of Din's own rooms, Din would let himself explore, would run his hands over the welts and feel out each individual sore spot, remember each stroke as it had fallen. Knowing that Bubba could come back at any second, though, Din made himself drag his hands through his hair instead, the sonic pulsing away the grime that he'd collected overnight, then stepped out and busied himself with getting ready for the rest of the day. The suns were bright outside. Din and Bubba had been lazy. Din couldn't remember the last time he'd stayed in bed past dawn. Well, without being injured, anyway, he thought, remembering how Ushib had ordered him into one of the infirmary beds the other day. Din had been put on bed rest before, though it rarely happened these days. When he'd been a young foundling trying to figure out how to throw a punch, he'd had to stay overnight in the covert's makeshift medbay several times. Usually for cracking heads with paws, Din thought, smiling faintly. But staying in bed just to touch Bubba, to bump Beskar and lay around in the warmth of the suns, was an indulgence that Din had never thought he'd have the time to take. It wasn't bad, though, he thought. He couldn't bring himself to feel all that guilty for staying in bed with Bubba while the rest of Tatooine had gone about the business of its day, because staying in bed with Bubba had been... Well, Din thought. It had been overwhelming in its way, especially when Bubba had brought Din to the edge of orgasm for a third time in less than 12 hours. When he'd had Din writhing against the sheets, toes curling, nearly blind with pleasure. All of Din's skin had been too hot, too sensitive. But it was good. Nice. Din had liked it. Bubba liked it too, Din thought. If Bubba wanted to be doing something else, running his outfit or holding court or even repairing his weapons and his armor, he would have been doing it. Din was a blooded warrior. He hadn't needed to be coddled all morning. But Boba did it, so he must have liked it too. Thinking about that made Din warm, made something in his chest lift and flutter, like a Junda bird shaking out its wings before it took flight. Din didn't want to examine that feeling too closely, half afraid of startling it away. Boba was still gone when Din padded out of the fresher, so Din took advantage of the privacy and found a clean shirt to tug on, then ducked back into the fresher to see what he could do about his hair and his patchy beard, both of which were curling wildly in several directions. He just finished trimming down the stray edges of his beard when Din heard the lift chime, and Boba, as simply dressed as Din had ever seen him, came out laden down with a heavy tray. Din blinked. Boba almost exclusively wore his complicated layers of Tusken robes. He would put a half-kuta on over the robe to support his armor, but underneath that, Boba was always wrapped up like a Tusken chief. Din had never asked Boba why he preferred Tusken robes over more standard humanoid clothes, over pants and a shirt like a spacer, or even the tough tactical uniforms Din had seen Axe Wolves and Cusker Reeves wear underneath their kutas. Din hadn't really needed to ask. Tusken robes were well-suited to life on Tatooine. Boba was settled here, determined to stay. He wouldn't be fighting against Gorga so hard if he didn't mean to stay. And the Tuskra, Din thought, watching Boba as he made his way over to the work table, moving carefully so he didn't spill what Din hoped was a steaming cup of red tea. Don't give just anyone the right to wear baribis. The Tuskra guarded the secret of their cloth-making just as fiercely as they guarded everything else. Boba had earned his desert robes. Even if he'd refused to let Ushib adopt him formally, with all of the blood and spirit rights, Boba had at least earned the right to wear a proper baribis, like any blooded Tusken warrior. But right now, setting plates heaped with fresh fruit and steaming squares of what Din thought was muta down on the work table, Boba was only wearing a thin pair of dark pants and a loose shirt that was open at the collar, letting Din catch a glimpse of the broad expanse of Boba's chest. Seeing him like this, in a way Din didn't think that many other beings alive had been allowed to see Boba, made that fragile, fluttering thing in Din's chest beat its wings harder. His ribs were sore with it. Boba caught Din staring and raised an eyebrow. He looked Din up and down. "You look better," Boba said, sounding satisfied. "Come here, let's get some more bacta on you, then we can eat." Din rolled his eyes, but didn't argue. He'd expected Boba to be like this. The bed was still a disaster, so Din braced himself against the fresher sink while Boba worked bacta carefully into his welts. He was more judicious this time in applying the bacta. Din's worst welts and all of his cuts got a fresh coat, went numb and cold immediately, but Boba left some of Din's other welts, the smaller ones and the ones that weren't quite so stinging and painful, alone. "Thought you might want to keep them," Boba explained, when Din craned his head around, lifting a curious eyebrow of his own down at Boba. "For a little while, anyway." Din very much did want to keep his welts. He didn't. "It's not that I like them," Din thought. The cane had been awful, merciless. Standing still for all 30 strokes had been one of the hardest things that Din had ever done. "But I did it." His welts, the reddened skin, the bruises, the stinging pain were all proof of that. I want to keep them, Din thought. So he told Boba that and was rewarded with a firm pat to the meat of his ass, and when Din hissed at both the sting and the indignity, a chuckle, too. Boba herded Din out of the fresher and sent him off to eat. By now, Din was ravenously hungry, and Boba deserved some time in the Sonic to himself, so Din let himself be herded without too much fuss, though he was careful to stay out of range in case Boba decided to move Din along with another SWAT. Alone again, Din dressed himself properly before going over to eat. His kuta and his armor were where Din had left them last night, piled neatly off to the side of the pillar, and Din was dressed within a few minutes, snapping his armor into place even as his thighs protested both the movement and the added weight. Then, almost fully armored except for his helmet, Din went over to the work table, sat down very gingerly, so he didn't jostle too many of his waltz, and tucked in. Boba had brought Din a cup of red tea, and he'd brought fruit and muta and bantha yogurt, too. Din was surprised to see the muta, though he did manage to eat three before that surprise really registered. Tuskens didn't usually eat during the heat of the day. Their meals were usually taken before dawn and just after dusk, though the children often munched on lausa nuts and bloodseed throughout the day. Something like muta, hearty and filling, was usually prepared for the evening meal. But Ushib must have gotten used to the way the palace operated. The palace was bustling all day, stuffed with guards and visitors both got hungry. Din wouldn't complain. Ushib's muta was good. Spicy and fragrant, the jipur dough rolled out thin, stuffed with meat and fried in shimmering jaloka oil. Din had eaten another two squares before Boba came out of the fresher, damp and freshly shaven, and was working his way through another one in between bites of bantha yogurt. Much cooler, a balm to soothe the spiciness of the muta, and sips of red tea. Boba caught sight of how much muta Din had eaten and rolled his eyes. There were only two squares left. "A favorite of yours," Boba said. Din swallowed his current mouthful. "Sorry," he said sheepishly. "I was hungrier than I thought." Boba waved Din's concern off, though he did confiscate the plate of fruit for himself. When Din offered him the last two squares of muta, Boba shook his head. "Last night took a lot out of you," said Boba. "Eat up, Jerrica." Din felt a little bit bad about eating an entire platter on his own, even though Boba didn't seem all that bothered. So he shook his head and leaned back in his chair, wincing as doing so jostled his welts and bruises. "I guess I'm not very good at communal meals," Din thought. Down in the covert, food had been on offer for most of the day, as Din's brothers and sisters had come and gone, stopped into the mess to eat after finishing a chore or a job or a round in the sparring ring. But the best food had always been served in the middle of the morning, after the sun or suns had risen on whatever planet, moon, or ringed space station they'd been living on at the time. The cooks, a rotating cast of the covert's warriors, changing every week or so to spread around the monumental task of feeding 30-odd Mandalorians at a time, would ring a Beskar bell and put out heaps and heaps of freshly cooked food. Hanshun and Tingilar so fragrant that even a Navarran sewer would smell like home. Wedges of biba fruit and little plates of steamed kare, when the elders could get it, and near-endless bowls of soups and curries and stews. Fried cave mushrooms on Dantooine, and slow-roasted tak meat on Kashyyyk. Boiled daubert eggs and cups of kotuk berries. The covert's warriors had come from many places, and they had lived in many more. There had always been something interesting to eat down in the covert among Din's brothers and sisters. At least for the first 5 minutes after the bell was rung, anyway, Din thought. That bell would echo through the entire covert, and everyone would drop what they were doing and converge on the mess all at once. Anybody who was late would still be able to find something to eat, but they were just as likely to find only the last badly charred Hanshun pasty as they were to find a bowl of overcooked tingilar, neither of which had been very appealing to Din when he'd been a growing teenager. He'd started out his time in the tribe small compared to the other foundlings, and had only really put on height and weight after he turned 16 or 17. Din had learned to grab what he wanted quickly, how to defend what he had wanted like a masif guarding a bone. All of the foundlings had. Old habits, I guess. Boba caught the morose, half-guilty way that Din was looking at the last pair of muta squares and snorted. "Here," Boba said, holding out the plate of fruit again. "I'll trade you for it." All of this was Boba's, anyway. The kitchens were his, the palace, the aquifer that fed Boba's collection of eclectic crops, the fruit they bore, the rest of the food Boba bought or traded for. Boba's eyes glittered. "He's gonna make me take some fruit anyway," Din thought, suppressing a sigh. "He'll tell me that I should keep my strength up or something, that a proper warrior needs a balanced meal." Boba was like Din's allure in that way. So Din obliged Boba, judging the lopsided trade too small to start an argument over, and accepted some biba fruit and what looked like some kind of pale-fleshed melon. Boba smiled at him. "So what's on the agenda for today?" Din asked Boba, once Boba'd had some time to catch up to Din and work his way through his fruit and the muta and the rest of the bantha yogurt. His usual morning cup of calf was missing. Din had nursed his own cup of red tea down to its last maratah dregs, then finished those off too. Boba looked up at Din, blinking at him across the table. "We've obviously missed morning court," Din added, looking past Boba to gauge the position of the suns. They were still high in the sky, but slanting westward. It was still early in the afternoon, but the morning was long since past. "Didn't hold it this morning," Boba said, slowly, blinking to catch up with Din. "I told Shand last night, give everybody, well, everybody but the guards, the morning off." "Oh," Din said, blinking too. "Why?" Boba had been busy the last few days. Not only was he fielding the usual business that came with a cartel, but the people of Mos Eisley had decided that they liked having Boba around after all and were coming to the palace in droves with their problems. Like the Wookiee, Dairy, who asked Boba to help her find her missing son, Din thought. Boba liked the work, Din knew. He liked being the one Mos Eisley's people came to. He liked mediating their disputes and finding their missing children. Liked brokering deals and arranging things to his liking, improving things, making things better. Boba liked all of that. He enjoyed it. So Din was surprised to hear that Boba'd called court off for the morning, even as Boba looked across the work table with a complicated expression on his face. Din couldn't parse it. "Why?" Boba asked slowly. "So I had time to take care of you, Jerrica." "Oh." Din could parse Boba's expression now. It was half affection and half disbelief, like Boba couldn't believe that Din needed this explained to him. Din flushed. You didn't need to cancel morning court for me," Din said weakly. I was fine when we woke up this morning, at least."
"You were,"
Boba agreed. For some reason, he was still smiling, the affection in his expression winning out over the disbelief. Din scowled at him. "I didn't need... You shouldn't disrupt the outfit for me," Din said. It had been nice to lay in bed with Boba all morning. It had been... good. Din had loved it. But he hadn't needed it. Boba spread his hands. "I didn't disrupt anything, Tanika," he added. Din scowled harder. Boba had called him that last night. Din wasn't sure of the exact translation, but he could guess. Boba had said, "Garatin, you're stubborn," often enough.
"Little stubborn thing."
"Din," Boba tried again. Some of his amusement faded. His expression sharpened. He waved a piece of biba fruit in Din's direction demonstratively.
"Orihat, I didn't disrupt anything. And even if I had, last night was intense. It was always going to be intense. Punishment usually is."
The welts on the backs of Din's legs throbbed, almost as if they could understand what Boba was talking about. As if Din's body was reacting to the tone of Boba's voice, remembering what Boba had done to it just hours ago. "Making sure that you're all right after that's Nibuirkan, Din. My responsibility," said Boba. Din opened his mouth, ready to argue. He had asked not to be coddled. Boba had agreed not to coddle him. And now...
"It is not," said Boba, his tone sharper still, irritation flashing. "Something that's negotiable, Din."
That stopped Din cold. He closed his mouth, even though faint anger was burning against the tip of his tongue,
and blinked. Boba negotiated just about everything. He made deals, talked over contracts. The stars only knew how many hours Din and Boba had spent talking in this very room, negotiating rules that Din still barely understood. No, he thought, a little guilty. That's not true. I understand. Boba's rules protected Din. They protected Boba, too. Kept this arrangement, whatever it had become, despite all of the blurred lines between it and Boba's business and Din's relationship with Boba inside this room and beyond it, safe. Helpful. They are the difference, Din thought, understanding at last, between hurt and harm. Boba saw Din come to that realization, to quit fighting, and softened. You're stubborn about this, he observed. Din blew out a breath through his nose. Why? Because I'm stubborn about most things, Din thought, though he managed to keep himself from saying it out loud. He didn't think Boba would appreciate it very much. Take your time, Boba added. He blew out a deep breath, too, taming some of his irritation, his temper, with visible effort. I won't push. Din huffed a little at that. All Boba did was push. Din could admit that he was stubborn, but Boba was stubborn, too. I don't need, Din began slowly, trying to choose the right words so that he got his point across without upsetting Boba any further. For you to drop everything else just to take care of me, he said. Din gestured at himself. I'm fine, Boba. I'm always fine. Din didn't need Boba to spend an entire morning making sure that he hadn't broken Din, that a few strokes of the reed cane hadn't stripped Din of his ability to fight, to protect Boba in the throne room. Understanding flashed across Boba's face, followed by a strange sort of anger. Boba wasn't angry with Din didn't think, but he is angry, Din thought. He wanted to pull his shoulders up around his ears, wanted to take a more defensible position, but knew that neither would help him much here. Boba saw, anyway, eyes as sharp as a shriekhawk's, and took another deep breath. He set his piece of Biba fruit aside. Din's neck prickled. Taking care of you, Boba said, every word slow and clear, it's not me trying to coddle you, Din. I didn't call off court this morning because I didn't think you'd be able to handle it. Din startled. He wanted to accuse Boba of reading his mind, but I have had someone else in my head now, Din thought. He'd felt Quinlan Vos moving around behind his eyes. He'd felt the distinct, separate feeling of Vos, the lightning buzz in the air, the cool touch of Vos's thoughts. Din didn't feel anything like that now. Boba wasn't a Jedi. He couldn't use the Force to wring answers out of Din's head. He just knows me too well, Din thought. He'd thought that before, too, that no one now knew Din as well as Boba did. You are not fragile, Boba said. His tone softened further. His dark eyes searched Din's face. Nugar Landurish. But that doesn't mean that you don't. That doesn't mean that I wanted to cane you and then turn you out to come back up from it on your own. A vague memory stirred. Din remembered most of the punishment itself. It would be hard to forget. The sheer, overwhelming, breathtaking hurt of it was stamped on the insides of Din's eyelids and would be for some time. But much of the rest of the night was blurred, vague and indistinct. A jumble of noises and smears of color and the sound of Boba's voice. I almost fell, Din said slowly. He reluctantly looked up and met Boa's eyes. The first time we went into the fresher, I couldn't stand up on my own. I'm not in your head, Jerrica, said Boba. But you seemed to think that I was testing you. You hadn't come all the way back up yet. I was still under, Din said, remembering what Boba had asked him. Or down? You've said before that it feels like flying in hyperspace for you, Boba said. So maybe under and down aren't the right words, but that's how it's been described to me before. It's an altered space, a different way of thinking. And it can last a long time. And you're more vulnerable in that space. Vulnerable sounded like fragile. Din gritted his teeth. He couldn't help it. Showing weakness was... Boba saw his expression change and held up a hand. It's not a bad thing, Boba said firmly. Taking your time to come back from your own head, it's... If it's what you need, Din, it's not a bad thing. It doesn't make you weak. It just means that my responsibility, as the one who put you in that vulnerable space, is to make sure that you come out of it all right, that it doesn't get worse. Din thought about the way he'd felt when he tried to stand on his own and hadn't been able to. Those feelings were blurry now, just smudges in his memory, but I thought that Boba would be angry, and I... What? Din thought. He wasn't sure now in the bright light of day, whole and content and grounded in his body, what he'd been so afraid of last night, why he hadn't wanted to let Boba down, why he'd been so afraid of failing the test he'd thought Boba had put in front of him. But I was afraid. It bothered Din that Boba had almost expected that. That he'd known to expect Din to react that way when Din himself hadn't. It almost made Din feel like he couldn't trust his own body entirely, his own thoughts. He had been so afraid. Why? It's not a bad thing, Boba repeated. His tone was so insistent, so fierce, that Din couldn't help but believe him. It's just a responsibility. One that I like, he added. Taking care of you, it's not a burden. Din eyed Boba, not sure if he believed him. It wasn't that Din thought that Boba was lying to him, because Boba didn't lie. It was just... He cleared his entire morning for me, Din thought. He set aside everything that he could have been, should have been doing. For me. No one had ever done that for Din before. Even when Paz or Annika had helped Din tend to an injury... Helped him stitch up a wound or set a broken bone, slapped Bacta over a blaster burn, or held him down to set a dislocated shoulder. They hadn't been able to set aside hours and hours to make sure that Din was healing well, that he was all right. They'd given him what they could, of course. A handful of minutes here and there, in between chores and minding the foundlings and securing the weapons and helping with the forge. Paz and Annika had given Din what they could. Everyone else had, too. Old Wirin had taped up Din's broken ribs once, and Tosho had given Din an extremely uneven set of stitches underneath Din's left elbow that Din could still feel 10 years later. Rina had made him heat packs to soothe the strained muscles after a spar or a hard job. And Din had cooked Din Krit soup every day for a week straight when Din had gotten Wawat pox as a teenager in Kashyyyk. Even the armorer took care of me when she could, Din thought. He had blurry memories of her moving among the foundlings' barracks at night, singing lowly and sweetly to a room full of war orphans.
He had even blurrier memories of careful hands tucking a kicked-off blanket back up around Din's shoulders, cool metal handguards against his forehead soothing away a nightmare. But all of that care, all of that, had been given in seconds and minutes, in whatever time Din's tribe had had to spare. That wasn't giving Din hours. But Boba had. Those hours pressed down between Din's shoulder blades. He felt them like an itch underneath his armor. They weighed on him, a debt unpaid. But Boba said that there was no debt, Din thought. Before he'd even started to cane Din, Boba had told Din that he was forgiven, that there was nothing between them, no score to settle, no debt. It had taken 30 strokes of the reed cane for Din to believe him, but... Nuentia, Boba had said. There is no debt. Din swallowed. Boba watched him thoughtfully. You know, he said, slowly, still watching Din's face. This, he jerked his chin in the direction of the bed, the rumpled sheets still tacky with oil and sweat and dried cum. Helps me, too, don't you? You've said that it does, Din admitted. Boba had been clear about that when he and Din had renegotiated the terms of their arrangement when Din had come back from the desert. You get clarity, right? Clarity and focus. Boba inclined his head. Taking care of you when you're in that space. It's a demonstration of trust, he said. It's Zhaonish. Rare and important to me. Gabar Har Kata. Boba pressed a closed fist to his chest. Din nodded slowly. If it helped Boba to do this, to spend an entire morning in bed with Din, coaxing him to new heights of pleasure. And not just pleasure, Din admitted to himself, in the privacy of his own thoughts. Coming apart on Boba's fingers under his mouth, that had been good, of course it had been good. But Din had liked just being with Boba, too. He'd liked the quiet moments as much as the noisy ones. He had liked the peace as much as the pain, and the pain as much as the pleasure. The hours he and Boba had spent just touching each other, skin pressed to skin. Boba knows. He knows what he's doing more than I do, Din reminded himself. He knows what he wants, and he knows what will help us both. Din certainly wasn't going to complain that he hadn't had to spend his morning on his feet, after all. He was sitting all right now, perched as he was at the edge of his chair, but he couldn't imagine trying to balance on one of the stools down at the bar, shifting and squirming where Nora and Fenna could see. Din would have had to spend the whole morning upright. Din dipped his head. All right, he said. All right, Boba. I understand. Boba relaxed. Good. Besides, he continued, tone lightening a little now that he knew Din wasn't going to argue any further. Everyone's been on edge the last few weeks. A morning off's good for morale. Din nodded. He could agree with that, he supposed. The entire outfit had been working just as hard as Din and Boba had. Fine, Din muttered, knowing that he wouldn't get Boba to change his mind. Boba did look better. Ever since the raid, Boba had worn dark shadows underneath his eyes. The lines around his mouth had deepened. But taking a long, lazy morning to spend in bed had softened some of those lines, lightened those shadows. If it's good for Boba, too, Din thought. Then I guess it's all right that he gave up an entire morning for me. Matter settled, at least for now, Din rolled his shoulders a little, determined to displace the faint guilt still collected in the air between Din and Boba, and said, So what's business, then?
You holding evening court? Boba eyed Din for a minute, but let him change the topic. He inclined his head. I am, he said. And before that, I'm for the desert. The Shaking Mountain set up a meeting. Their outriders have been patrolling the Northern Dune Sea for me, looking for Guhra. I want to hear what they've got to report.
Din had never met anyone from the Shaking Mountain tribe before, but their reputation wasn't quite as fearsome as that of the Spotted Anuba. Din had heard of a few homesteads getting run over by Shaking Mountain bands, but that was the worst he'd heard of them. He nodded.
When? Din asked.
Din could use some time out of the palace, he supposed, though he dreaded the thought of riding out on a speeder. The backs of his legs throbbed.
Maybe I can convince Boba to fly out there, he thought, half hopeful.
Jetpacks were usually faster than speeder bikes, and Din wouldn't need to sit to use his. Boba craned his head around to check the position of the suns in the sky, then grimaced.
In about an hour, actually, he said.
Din nodded again. He could be ready to go in an hour. He was already mostly armored, after all. He wanted to check in with Fennec, but outside of that, all he needed was a speeder. Din still hadn't found a regular replacement for the bark that had been destroyed when Din and Geeta had been attacked on the sand road. He'd taken his jetpack everywhere, or he'd borrowed whichever speeders were closest at hand when he'd had to leave on a job. Din made to stand, rolling his shoulders to wake his body up a little, but stopped when Boba raised a hand, and grimaced again, apologetic this time.
"As much as I'd like you with me," said Boba, "I need you to stay here today."
Din immediately scowled.
"You're not going out to the Dune Sea by yourself," he said. "Fennec'll kill you."
"I'm not going by myself," Boba assured him. He softened his grimace and smiled instead, crookedly.
"Fennec wouldn't hear of it. I'm going to be well guarded, don't worry about me."
"Who's going with you?" Din demanded, already sorting through his internal list of Boba's hunters and guards. Boba had plenty of guards. Fewer hunters, and fewer still hunters and guards Din would actually trust with Boba's safety, outside of himself and Fennec.
I'd only trust three or four, now that Zero's dead.
Kasik was big enough that only an idiot would attack him directly, and Wookiee loyalty ran deep. Tava, a particularly fearsome Twilight Guardswoman, who had, if palace gossip was right, lost a Leku wrestling a Rancor in a pit fight, had tackled a disgruntled moisture farmer to the ground during court last week for spitting at Boba's feet. Theron was solid and dependable, but the rest... Boba rolled his eyes.
"Ushib to start with," he said.
Din stopped thinking quite so furiously and blinked at Boba, disarmed.
"Oh," he said.
Din didn't know much about the Shaking Mountain, but Ushib probably would. And even the most bloodthirsty young raider, the bravest chief, would think twice before attacking Ajita, even if the Shaking Mountain and the Spotted Anuba were rivals, Din thought.
"Kasik's coming along, too, even though he'll complain about sand in his fur for days," Boba added. "And a handful of the rotation out in Mos Pelgo's coming along, too. The Shaking Mountain are their closest neighbors outside of the Sun Rock. Kirsha Littlemoon and a few of her people."
Din made himself drop his shoulders, mollified even if he didn't like the idea of letting Boba out of his sight. Ushib and Kasik would be able to handle anyone who tried to make a grab for Boba on the way out to the meeting, and Din had met Kirsha Littlemoon. Cobb Vanth liked her, he remembered.
"Boba will be fine."
"What do you need me to do here, then?" Din asked.
"Boba must have a good reason for wanting me here."
But despite all of the time Din had spent inside the palace now, Din still hadn't actually had too much to do with the palace or its staff. He didn't know what Boba might need him here for. Aside from what Din had come to think of as bodyguard duty in the throne room, Din wasn't part of the usual rotation of palace guards. He hadn't had anything to do with palace repairs or palace security, either. Nora had been in charge of the repair crews, and Fennec took on all of the security herself. But he must have a reason, Din thought. He couldn't think of why Boba would want Din to stay behind if there wasn't work for Din to do here. Boba blew out a thoughtful breath.
Jassa, said Boba slowly, hasn't cracked yet.
Din raised his eyebrows. Jassa had been in the dungeons for several days by now. He was surprised that she hadn't broken. Din usually avoided the dungeons, but he knew that they weren't comfortable. No dungeon was.
She fought me like a Wrathtar, he remembered.
The scratches on his face were almost entirely gone now, erased by Boba's attentive care and several days underneath Simbacta. But Jassa had fought to get away.
What's she afraid of? Din wondered. Why'd she fight so hard to escape? Why is she holding out for so long? What's she trying to keep us from learning? Why?
Jalto had cracked within just a few days, all the way back at the beginning of this enterprise. Most Zygarians, Kirk, most slavers, Din thought, most smugglers and rifle runners and bail jumpers and scugs weren't hard to get information out of. The inhabitants of this corner of the galaxy tended to be pragmatic above everything else, and most would sell out a client or an employer for a few extra credits or the chance to avoid pain. The threat of pain, or even the threat of a reduced profit, was enough in Din's experience to get most beings like Jassa to talk.
Unless she's more afraid of who she's working for than she is of us, Din thought, frowning a little.
He didn't know Gorga the Hutt beyond what he'd learned since joining Boba's outfit, but Din had known Jabba. Jabba had been cruel, utterly ruthless. Most beings had been too afraid to cross him. The only ones who had dared to risk it had either been desperate or stupid. If Gorga was anything like that, cruel and ruthless beyond even the casual cruelty, the pragmatic ruthlessness that was common in the Outer Rim.
But still, Fennec's as friendly as a Ferrixen. If she was in front of me, trying to get information out of me, I'd be more afraid of her than any Hutt.
Leave Jassa herself to Fennec, Boba advised. But you're still welcome in the quarter, aren't you?
Din nodded slowly.
He didn't understand what Boba wanted, not yet. But Din thought that he was getting closer. He was welcome in Mos Eisley's quarter. Geeta had helped Din out there, as had Cobb Vanth and Din's easy acceptance among the people of Mos Pelgo. He still felt like an outsider there among the Ahra, but Din knew that he was welcome.
At least, he thought, I'm about as welcome as any free man.
What do you need in the quarter? Din asked curiously. Boba's expression was distant and thoughtful.
I'm not entirely sure, he said slowly.
But if Jassa doesn't talk, or if she dies before she breaks, then we're still vulnerable to Gorga. Taking Jassa out will complicate things for him, Boba added, regardless of whether or not she talks. Colburn's crew turned up enough information to convince me that Jassa is Gorga's contact in the city. Getting some particulars out of Jassa would be good. She hardly worked alone. But it's not entirely necessary, not if we can get the information from somewhere else.
And you think that information might be in the quarter?
Boba shrugged. I think, he said, that a lot of people in the quarter probably lost friends and family to Jassa's operation, yeah?
Din looked out over the desert, thinking hard again.
Yeah, he said, drawing the word out a little. Din knew at least one person in the quarter who'd lost someone to Jassa's slaving ring.
Gela's place belonged to Geeta's older sister, said Din.
He looked at Boba again. Boba's eyes were sharp and keen.
Gela disappeared a few years ago, Geeta told me, and Jassa moved in.
Boba inclined his head. The Wookiee mother who came to me yesterday, I think maybe her son was taken by Jassa's crew, too. Jassa's last shipment off-planet was a few weeks ago, right?
That's what Voss said, Din reported.
The Jedi, he added at Boba's confused expression. The confusion cleared immediately, replaced by a faint scowl, but Din ignored it. Boba would probably like Quinlan Vos if he ever met the man. And if he didn't, Vos can handle himself. He came to Tatooine because he'd been one of the kids in that shipment was Force-sensitive, Din continued. The kid's family asked Vos for help, but by the time he'd gotten there, the kid was gone. Off down the sorrow lanes, Boba murmured. Din nodded. Cold anger crystallized in his chest. He could see the same anger reflected in Boba's eyes. Boba's decree had been in effect a few weeks ago. He'd outlawed slavery in his territories months ago. Jossa had ignored that ruling, had been ignoring it. Din hadn't raided her office like Vos and Colburn had, but the cave underneath Gela's place had told Din everything that he needed to know. No one embedded chains in the wall or put up frequency-jamming devices for a one-time shipment. And we didn't know about it. You think someone in the Quarter, someone who lost family to Joss's gang, might have more information? Din asked. Might have something, at least, said Boba. It's, I don't know, a gut feeling. Something doesn't add up, you know? Din nodded again. He did know. Din had been thinking the same thing for days now. Jossa's never been to the palace, Din said. At least not since you've taken the throne. Not while I've been here. Hundreds, probably thousands now, of beings had come through the throne room since Boba had taken over. A good number of them had passed Din to do it, too. His position by the stairs had let him see just about everyone who'd come and gone. Din hadn't seen every single face that had gone past him. He didn't remember everyone. But Zygerians were uncommon enough on Tatooine, and Din more aware of them, since the first being he'd ever hunted for Boba had been a Zygerian, that Din would have remembered seeing Jossa. No, Boba said, confirming what Din thought. She hasn't been here. Fennec's never seen her around either. She had a crew, and it's possible that one or two of her crewmates had been here poking around, but she had to have somebody on the inside, keeping an eye on us. That made sense. Because how else did Gorga's thugs know to go after Ushib? Din murmured. Gorga had gone after Din himself, too, but that was easier to explain. Just about everyone on Tatooine knew who Din was by now, knew his position in the court, knew how close he stayed to Boba. Lady Valerian knew me, Din thought, and she's on the other side of the Dune Sea. Jossa was just one town over. But Gorga's thugs had gone for Ushib, and while Ushib was in the palace often, she was rarely around Boba during court. Boba relied on her advice, but she didn't sit perched at his shoulder, or Boba at her knee. Din had been at the palace for months before he'd finally met Ushib. I can ask Geeta and her friends if they know of any other slavers still running an operation in Mos Eisley, Din offered. We either caught or killed a good number of Jossa's crew, but we could have missed someone. Or there might be other crews Jossa worked with. Boba dipped his head. A good place to start, anyway, he said. You might want to find Daeri, too, see if she's seen anything odd before her son went missing. The Wookiee? Boba nodded. She lives in the Quarter, too, she said. I'll find her, said Din. I thought Kasik was working that job, though. Kasik can share, said Boba. He smiled faintly. And I remember you telling me that you were a better hunter than him. Din stared at Boba, confused, then blinked because he remembered that too. Under the palace in the treasure room beneath the throne, when Boba had tried to give Din all of that Beskar. I said I could outfight him, Din corrected Boba, wincing a little. All of that seemed so far away now. Din hadn't been back to that treasure room. He wondered how much Beskar was left down there now that Din had stopped letting Boba pay him in Beskar. Boba chuckled. You probably still could, he said. He finished the last of his fruit and sighed, then looked at Din again. Be careful in the city, Boba said. City safer than the desert, Din replied. Boba snorted. Din, he said. I mean it. Be careful. You said it yourself. We don't know if we got Joss's entire crew. There could be other Hutt sympathizers in the city. Anybody who's left will be nervous and angry. Din could tell that Boba wouldn't budge, not about this. If Din didn't agree, Boba'd probably send Din into Mos Eisley with a bodyguard of his own, like Cacique trailing Din to Mos Entha. And if Din had a shadow, the people of the Quarter might be reluctant to talk to him. "I'll be careful," Din promised. He cut Boba a narrow-eyed look. "If you'll be careful in the desert." Boba laid a hand over his chest. "I'll be careful," he said, echoing Din. He smiled again, less faint this time. "It's Ashukri who should be worried. Ushib's got a long memory. Ashukri once led a raid on the spotted Anuba and stole 7 banthas." Din winced. Promises made, there wasn't much left for Din and Boba to do but get on with the rest of the day. Din helped Boba clear the table, then helped Boba armor himself, strapped his own weapons on, and then they went down to the throne room together, though Boba broke off before they made it all the way there and went down another hall on his own. He pressed his armored wrist to Din's before he did it, though. The contact, as usual, settled Din some. "Be careful," Din repeated, his voice now regulated by his helmet. "I will be," Boba assured him again, and then he was gone. Din made his way into the throne room on his own. The palace halls were golden and quiet, though the quiet wasn't the empty echo of a half-abandoned palace or the strained hush of a palace that had been recently attacked. Din could still hear droids moving around, cleaning the halls, and he could hear the guards murmuring among themselves as they patrolled, their boots echoing off the sandstone floors. The familiar noises comforted Din. The throne room, when he made it there, was empty except for Fennec, who was sitting at the bar with her palace map shimmering in the air in front of her, and Nora, who was behind the throne, cursing in Rill as she tried to hang what looked like a large woven tapestry up over the ugly scar Paz's plasma thrower had left in the wall. Din looked between the two of them. Neither had noticed Din hovering in the doorway, though Fennec probably knew where Din was most of the time, and decided to help Nora first. Nora had found a wooden ladder somewhere in the depths of the palace and was perched unsteadily atop it, balanced on her toes as she fussed with folds and folds of woven cloth. Din cleared his throat quietly so he didn't startle Nora off her perch, and put a foot down on the ladder's bottom rung to hold it more firmly to the floor. Nora flashed a grateful smile down at him and went back to cursing. "She looks better too," Din thought, studying Nora. Boba wasn't the only one who had needed a morning off. Nora, who had for weeks been growing paler and paler, stress carving lines around her mouth, the corners of her eyes, was a bright, healthy shade of blue today, and despite her cursing, she seemed cheerful enough, with some of the shadows underneath her eyes erased and the lines around her mouth softened to just the kind left by age instead of stress or grief. Nora had taken Gorga's raid and Zero's death very hard. Geeta had told Din that Nora had scarcely left the palace. Even when she wasn't manning the bar during morning or evening court, Nora had thrown herself into the repair effort and had even picked up a few turns around the palace as a guard. "She's worried for us," Geeta had said, her mouth pinching down like Nora was the one who needed worrying after, not Geeta herself. But Nora had evidently gotten some sleep since Din had seen her last night. She'd changed clothes and the set of her leku was relaxed. Her movements, instead of being clumsy with stress and exhaustion, were graceful and loose. "Good," thought Din, pleased. He liked Nora. "Need help?" he asked, watching Nora continue to struggle with the tapestry. Din couldn't tell what it was, not from this angle, but he caught flashes of color, sky blue, sandstone red, bands of green and black. The scarred stone behind the tapestry still gave Din some pause whenever he looked at it. The ugly, melted length of it, the stone deformed and dripping, the char burned deep into the rock. No amount of servo-droid scrubbing had done anything to soften that scar. "That's probably why Nora's covering it up," Din thought. He wanted to touch the edge of the melted stone and made himself put a steadying hand on Nora's back instead. Even with Din's weight holding the ladder down, Nora was starting to wobble on her toes. The melted scar in the stone wall behind Boba's throne stared at Din, dark and accusatory. Paz Vizsla was many things, but he wasn't reckless. "Well," Din amended, thinking of some of the trouble he'd gotten up to with Paz at his side as a kid, "he's not any more reckless than the rest of us are." Working in close proximity with Fennec Shand, who was careful and meticulous all of the time, had shown Din that the way he'd grown up doing things, the Mandalorian way of doing things, was different than the way other beings ran a job or took care of a hunt. But Paz is... he's hot-headed, but he's not stupid. He doesn't throw a plasma around just because he can. Paz only brought out his plasma thrower when he wanted someone or something dead. The plasma he'd let loose in the throne room had sheared off the top of Boba's throne, splashed against this wall. He was aiming for Boba. Paz had been trying to kill Boba. Din wasn't sure how he felt about that. No, he thought to himself, curling his free hand into a loose fist. Anger was easy to reach for. I know how I feel about it. Paz was Din's brother. He was. But Boba... Boba gave him shelter, Din thought. Boba took in Paz and the Verdike, took in all of Paz's kids, even though he doesn't like other Mandalorians. He took me in. Din made himself stop. Working himself up like this wasn't a good idea. He had a job to do, tasks to accomplish, and none of them were flying out to Mos Pelgo to kick Paz's bucket in again. Even though it would make me feel a lot better. No, said Nora, despite the fact that she was 2 or 3 inches too short to reach the hook she needed. The folds of the tapestry were bunched tightly in her hands. Almost kark. She reached too far and tipped over, yelping out another curse. Din hastily reached up and caught her, keeping the ladder braced so she didn't pitch off entirely and end up in a heap on the floor. Nora took most of the tapestry down with her, pulling loose what had already made it up on the wall. Looks great, Fennec called, still absorbed in her map. Nora huffed. All right, she said, regaining her balance. She tossed Alaku back over her shoulder and looked down at Din, offering him the tapestry. I could use a little help. Din rolled his eyes. He was taller than Nora, though, and managed to get the tapestry back up on the wall, despite how alarmingly the ladder creaked when he asked it to hold his weight. When he was finished, he climbed back down and took a few steps back, craning his head to see what all the fuss was about. What is it? Din asked, flicking his gaze over the tapestry. Most of the other tapestries Nora had chosen for the throne room were relish. They reminded Din of the brass moons hung on the walls in Gela's place, beaten metal rich with patterns and symbols. It made sense, he supposed. Boba had told Din before that he had little use for art, and so if Nora had been the one deciding what made it into the throne room or not, a strong preference for Relish-style art made sense. But this tapestry was different. It was less abstract. Instead of a story told with symbols and stylized shapes, the images on the tapestry were clear. The palace? Din asked, looking at Nora. Nora's answering smile was sly. Look closer, she said. Intrigued now, Din did. Boba's palace was the dominant feature of the tapestry, taking up most of the cloth. Sandstone red walls and pale towers rising against a blue Tatooine sky. The suns had been woven in gold, surrounded by a cloud of white Junda birds, and the Jundland canyons were a thin band of rust in the background. In the foreground was the sand road between the palace and Mos Eisley, with red rocks clustered around its edges. But there was more to the tapestry than just scenery. When Din looked closer, he saw figures woven in fine thread. Boba, said Din, studying the small green figure standing in front of the palace at the end of the sand road. The little woven Boba was only a few inches tall, but the detail was incredible. Din could make out the shape of Boba's helmet, a Gaderfi raised over his head. He was standing with one foot on top of a beaked skull. The Sarlacc. Now that Din had found Boba, he found several other figures cleverly woven into the image, too. Fennec, in orange and black thread, stitched atop one of the palace's domes. A band of Tusken Raiders in the distance, riding a mixture of Banthas, Speeders, and Bladebacks. There was a crate dragon hiding in a cluster of red rocks in the foreground, mouth lined with white teeth. And there were ordinary people on the road to the palace. Twi'leks and Deveronians in bright reds and oranges and blues, green Rhodians stitched lighter than the color of Boba's armor, a few Tuskens in sand-colored robes, and moisture farmers in their loose white tunics. "Where are you?"
Din asked, searching the tapestry for Nora. She smiled. Here, she said, and pointed to one of the windows cut in the palace's towers. Nora was leaning out of one, stitched in shimmery blue thread, her leku long and curling. And you're here, Nora added, pointing up at the cloud of Junda birds around the suns. Din blinked, startled. I am? He looked closer, and sure enough, there he was. A little silver figure flying among the birds, caught in a circle around the suns. Of course you're on here, Nora said easily. You're one of us, aren't you? I tried to get everybody on. There's Kasik on those rocks over there, and there's A2 and Zero by that wall, and Ushib's back with the Tuscans there. She pointed everyone out one by one. I had it commissioned before most of the guards joined up, though, so if anybody asks, tell them that they're on here, and if they can't find themselves, they're just not looking hard enough. Din smiled under his helmet. He couldn't help it. He wanted to reach up to touch the silver thread stitched up there with the Junda birds, but he didn't want Nora to see how affected he was. Din's name had been recorded among the rolls and lists of the Fighting Corps when he'd been accepted as a foundling, as was custom. He had been written there, placed with the rest of his tribe, counted among their number. They'll cross me off when Paz finds the armor and tells her what I did. That was the custom, too. The Darmanda were like the dead. Din's name would be struck from the roster and would pass out of memory. That was how it was supposed to work, at least. It never actually worked that way. Grogu would remember Din's name, Din hoped, and the Jedi would, too. Paz and Annika would remember it, even if they never spoke it again. But Din had never expected to be recorded anywhere else, he thought. To be counted among someone else's tribe. The little silver Mandalorian stitched into the tapestry along with everyone else. It wouldn't last forever. Kark, Din thought. Gorga might still kill us all. Take the palace, burn everything left inside of it. Gorga would have no use for a tapestry that showed Boba like this, as a unifier. That was the purpose behind the tapestry, Din thought. It showed not just Boba the warrior, victorious over one of the desert's most feared creatures, but Boba as a king. Boba surrounded by allies, by Tuscans, by the people of Mos Eisley coming to him for help. If Gorga took the palace, he'd destroy the tapestry. But while it was here, while it lasted, Din was on it, just like Fennec, just like Nora, like Ushib and Kasik and everyone else. Something hard and sharp lodged itself in Din's throat. It wasn't grief, but it wasn't just joy either. It was a complicated feeling. Din had no words for it. He blinked several times to clear his eyes and was grateful that he had his helmet on. You commissioned this, Din asked roughly. Nora nodded. The boss wouldn't, she said. She rolled her eyes a little, though she looked fond. He doesn't really get the point of something like this, you know? Din thought of Boba's rooms, still spare despite the months he'd been living in the palace. How stark the throne room had been, stripped of Jabba's trophies. All of the art Boba had sold off as he'd found it in the treasure rooms beneath the palace. Din nodded. I think I do, he said. Nora made a noncommittal sound. Is it just the boss, she asked, or are your people pretty, economical, too? Economical, Din smiled. We didn't live lavishly, Din said. We moved around too much for that. But we had things we brought with us to brighten up the covert, especially for the kids. They hadn't had anything as richly detailed as this. This tapestry that must have taken many months and many hands to weave, that had over a dozen different colors of dyed thread. But the covert had had the Beskar wrought mythosaur skull, which had always marked the forge in the Allura's quarters, that had hand-knitted blankets for all of the foundlings to ward off the underground chill. Navarro hadn't had much to dye wool or cloth with, but when they'd lived on Kashyyyk, they'd had so many colors to choose from that their blankets had looked like platters of fruit, almost, dizzy with color.
They'd had armor paint and all sorts of small trinkets. Shriekhawks carved from Rosher wood, or iron wolves napped out of stone, fabric moth owls with different colored wings, all sorts of things that could be set out on a shelf behind Averd's bed to show off, then tucked safely into a pocket or a field kit when the covert moved again. But nothing like this? Din shook his head. No, he said, nothing like this. Well, the boss told me I could decorate how I wanted to, Nora said, so I asked Usheep for some ideas. You know Tuscan weaving? Din nodded again. He did. Tuscan weaving usually favored bold patterns, too, maybe some animal shapes, intricate plants, and repeating designs. But he could see how Usheep might have given Nora some ideas. I thought a tapestry sounded nice, she said. Sounded, well, I don't know, fancy without being Udmian. Jabba'd never bother commissioning something like this. He only put up things he had stolen or killed. A man in carbonite once, can you imagine? Din winced. He hadn't used any of his bounties as wall hangings, but carbonite was efficient. I have some weaver friends in the quarter, said Nora. She gestured at the other tapestries hanging around the room, the Rillish ones with their symbols and patterns, their stories hidden in curling loops and swirls. This one's a bit different from their usual, but... It's good, Din said. The next smile Nora gave Din was quiet and pleased. I think so, she said. The boss probably won't notice, but... She shrugged. The rest of us will, I think. And everyone who comes to visit. He'll notice, Din assured her. I hope so, said Nora, grinning mischievously. He paid for it, after all. Not that he noticed when I requisitioned the clink, but still. If you're done admiring your handiwork, Fennec called again, interrupting Din and Nora, though she sounded nice enough about it, warm and relaxed. Come here, Jaren, I've got a job for you. Din lifted his eyebrows underneath the helmet. It is really nice, he assured Nora, who beamed at him. Then Din turned and crossed the throne room, joining Fennec at the bar. Despite her cheerful tone, Fennec was sitting slumped over a stool, a half-empty glass of spatchka by her elbow, and she was studying all of the blinking red dots intently. She looked up when Din made it over to her and brightened some. Fennec looked Din up and down. You look better, she said. Her expression turned sly for a moment. Good night. The backs of Din's thighs itched. She can't see it, Din told himself. She doesn't know what Boba and I did. Restful, said Din primly. You. That made the smile slip off Fennec's face a little bit, though she just shrugged. I've had worse, she allowed. I won't be sleeping much, not until all of this is over. Sorry, Din said, feeling a little guilty for needling her now. She looked better, that was true, but then Fennec rarely looked bad. She was just as stressed as the rest of them were, most likely, just as ready for the whole mess with Gorga to be resolved one way or another. But she usually didn't show it like Din or Boba did. That doesn't mean she's not feeling the pressure, too, he thought. She might have gotten some rest last night, but if she still hasn't been able to crack Gorga's spy network open... Din made a sympathetic noise. Jossa still holding out on you? Don't get me started, Fennec muttered, taking a bitter drink. She's tougher than I thought she'd be. Jalto cracked like a fresh Jundabird bird egg, even though he didn't know much, but Jossa... Fennec shook her head. Din drummed his fingers against the bar for a moment, thinking... and then said, does that bother you like it's bothering me? He asked. Fennec cocked her head to the side. What do you mean? Is Gorga crueler than Jabba? Din asked, following the line of thought he'd had earlier that afternoon, eating with Boba over the work table. That made Fennec blink. He has a reputation, she said slowly, but... Not one that's any worse than Jabba's was, no. All the Hutts are cruel, but they're not Crimson Dawn. You can reason with a Hutt, usually. So why is Jossa fighting you so hard? Din pressed.
Is it fear of Gorga? Is she just that loyal? It's, I don't know, that kind of loyalty, it's not something you often see with the Hutts, is it?
No, said Fennec. She was frowning hard now. It's not.
So, what is it? Din asked. What's keeping Jossa so loyal? Did you get much out of the other two?
Din and Fennec had brought Jossa and two of her lackeys back with them. The human woman who'd lost a hand to the Darksaber, and Ono, the weakway who'd played cards with Din and Savar before Din had poked his bucket into the cave underneath the cantina.
The woman died, said Fennec. Shock, I think.
And the weakway, he told me a little, but he didn't know much. Jossa didn't trust him with anything sensitive. I got some drop-off points from him. Colburn's crew is watching them now. And he told me that Jossa would go off-world every 2 weeks to meet with Gorga directly, but that's about it. Oh, and he confirmed that it was Jossa's crew who took speeders out to the canyons. Jossa's crew used the canyons to move slaves for years.
Where'd they meet? Din asked, processing all of that information.
He felt a flash of cold satisfaction. He'd been right about Jossa helping Gorga stage the raid, then.
Gorga and Jossa.
He was no assassin, but if they could find out where Gorga and Jossa regularly met, Din was willing to do what he had to do to end all of this. Something was itching at the back of his thoughts. He didn't know what it was, and it bothered him.
Varied, according to Ono, said Fennec, tone sour. It was never the same place twice, and Jossa'd only tell her crew where she'd been after she got back. There were some of the usual hot hideouts, Narshada, Narkanji, Jiguna, Corellia, but some odder places, too. Ono said Jossa went to Naboo once.
Din swore to himself, irritated. He hated a puzzle he couldn't solve.
Boba wants me to go into the city again, Din said. He cast a look at Fennec, who took another drink.
To the quarter to see if anyone knows if Jossa still got a few crewmates running loose, or if there's any information about her operation in the Ahra, no.
Fennec drained her glass and grimaced.
It can hardly hurt, she said. I'm going to spend some more time with Jossa today. Either way, we've taken an accomplice, a prolific one, too, off the Djarik board. Gorga, at least, will have to take some time, get another player in. It's just... I don't know. I want Jossa's whole network.
Din nodded. He understood.
I'll see what I can turn up, then, he said. And Voss said he'd come back. Maybe he can help.
Maybe, said Fennec, though she sounded unconvinced.
I always heard that Jedi mind tricks only worked on the weak-willed, and Jossa...
She's not that.
Din tilted his head a little.
I think Skywalker told me the same thing once, he said slowly.
Din had asked Skywalker once if Skywalker could read minds, and he'd said that while he could, it wasn't easy for him, and it was even harder when a being like Din, who'd been concerned at the time that Skywalker had read his mind, was strong-willed.
Well, if she hasn't cracked or died by the time your Jedi friend makes it in, he can try anyway, said Fennec.
As for you, be careful in Mos Eisley, okay?
I told Boba I would be, Din assured her.
That means no sticking your nose in Hutt business without backup, Fennec added. Kasik's going out with the boss, but if you need someone at your back, Tava's around.
Din shook his head. He didn't know Tava very well, and he also wasn't sure that she'd inspire much trust in the denizens of the quarter. She still looked like a pit fighter.
I won't kick any drill wasp nests, Din said. Not alone, anyway. Besides, I've still got my fob on me.
I know, said Fennec. She brought a hand up and pointed to a glowing red dot on her holomap.
That's you.
Din watched the dot blink steadily for a moment.
See, he said. Then I'll be fine.
Fennec snorted.
You better be, she said. Otherwise you won't just have Boba after you.
Din, having faced what Boba's punishment looked like, thought about what Fennec might do if she found herself particularly displeased with Din, and paled.
I'll be fine, Din said again, keeping his voice even.
Same for you, yeah. I know you'll be here, but...
But Gorga's gotten in before, Fennec muttered, eyeing the field of blinking dots like she expected them to start winking out at any moment.
Yeah, I know.
Din grimaced.
It's gonna be a great day, sounds like, he said.
Fennec lifted her empty glass.
I'll drink to that, she said. Good luck.
Din left the palace to high afternoon suns. The sand road shimmered with heat. Despite the risk of getting ambushed from one of the ridges, and despite the pain in his ass and his legs, each individual welt and cut protesting when Din put his full weight on them, Din took a speeder bike instead of flying. He hoped that the heat would keep away any attack. Din managed well enough because his kuta kept him cool, circuits whining as they kicked into gear once Din left the shadow of the palace. But this time of day was usually so hot that only the stupid or the desperate ventured out. Fortunately, no one very stupid or very desperate tried anything. Din made it to the outskirts of Mos Eisley without passing another living soul, focusing on the burn in his thighs. The pain was clean and bright and wonderful. It sharpened Din to a fine edge. He was ready to track down the rest of Joss's crew if any had escaped. Once he reached the city, he could see the odd person or two moving around, but most of the city was indoors to avoid the heat. The city wouldn't truly come back to life until the sun started to set and temperatures dropped. Usually, Din dropped his speeder off in a public yard and went through the city on foot. He saw more that way. He could track down who turned away when they saw him and who relaxed, who spat in the streets at the sight of him and who kept their heads down. But the heat was intense and just about everyone was inside anyway, so Din racked his speeder down into a lower setting and coasted its way through the edge of the business district, which was still and silent, down the main stretch of the gleaning and into the quarter. Din was a familiar sight here by now. No one ever spat on the streets or turned away when they saw him coming. A few people even waved. I should start with Gita, Din thought. Then, if Gita hadn't seen anything or didn't know anyone who'd seen Joss's crew around, he could ask Ruli or one of her cousins. He wanted to find Daeri, the Wookiee, too, since her son had only gone missing a few weeks ago. Her memory might be good enough to get Din detail if she had seen anyone unusual around. He knew where to find Gita's house, though. A few minutes of careful coasting through the narrow streets of the quarter found him pulling his speeder off to the side, straightening the folds of his cloak to hide the darksaber, and making his way to Gita's front door. When he knocked, though, Gita wasn't the one who answered. The door opened, and Din found himself blinking down at Gita's mother, Imiri. Imiri had the same patterns tattooed on her laku as Gita did, but her skin was paler, a dusty pink instead of Gita's orange. The shade of her skin was just about the only difference between them, though. Gita strongly resembled Imiri, who had a pretty, round face and graceful limbs. She looked delicate, like the kuka birds dimly remembered from his childhood, long-legged creatures that had picked their way step by step through the reeds at the edge of the river. She was a dancer, too, Din remembered. Imiri taught all of her children to dance like she did. Gita told me that. Oh, said Imiri, blinking up at Din. Mr. Mandalorian? I'm Din, Din said, pitching his voice lower so that he didn't startle Imiri. Din had seen her a few times. She'd slung drinks beside Nora at the palace's bar once or twice, and she always stayed up to greet Gita when Din brought her home, but Din had never actually spoken to Gita's mother. Gita's friend, he added. That made Imiri smile. Yes, she said. She's told me about you. You're the one who's kept her safe. It's been... We all look after her, Din said. For some reason, he wanted to scratch the back of his neck, to curl his shoulders in to make himself smaller, less intimidating. Despite how delicate and gentle she looked, something about Imiri reminded Din of Nora. Imiri's smile widened. That is true, she said. Her voice was light and musical. Gita only had a trace of a Rillish accent, but it was stronger in Imiri. But you're the only one my Gita calls Manera. Nura Ulkru calls you the same. Ulkru? Din repeated, tasting the word. He'd never asked Nura for her clan name. Sometimes the Twi'leks of Tatooine didn't have a Rillish clan. Sometimes they preferred to keep their family names to themselves. Strong-willed, he translated. You speak Rill? Imiri asked, switching over to that language. Her accent was stronger in it, bright and genuine. Din had known dancers who'd affected a Rillish accent to sound more exotic and mysterious, but Emiria's accent wasn't an affectation. "I speak some," Din said slowly. He wasn't as quick with Rill as he was with Tuscan or Hadiz, but he knew enough to get by. Emiria's eyebrows went up. "No wonder Nora likes you," she said, still in Rill. She switched back to basic. "Strong-willed is a good name for Nora, don't you think?" One of Emiria's Leku twitched with amusement. "She earned it when we were all children." "It suits," Din admitted. Nora was a force to be reckoned with, even if she was cheerful and polite most of the time. "And you are... your family name is Anu, right?" That had been the name on Gela's identicard. Gela Anu. But Emiria shook her head. Her eyes had widened in surprise. "That was... my daughter's husband's clan was Anu," she said. "We are, well, on Ryloth we'd be of Clan Hra. I still use the name, as does my daughter, but it's different here." Din wasn't sure he understood the distinction, but he wasn't a Twi'lek, so he only nodded. "Hra," he said. The word meant bright, if he remembered it right. "How did you know my Gela's name?" Emiria asked. Kirk, Din thought. He took a deep breath. He didn't want to lie to this woman, Gita's mother. "I found it," Din said carefully. 4 days ago, when we raided Gela's place." Emiria, to her credit, didn't flinch. "You found it," she said. Din nodded. "On an identicard," he said. The Zygerian who had been running the cantina for the last few years had it on her. The card, I mean. Emiria closed her eyes. "I see," she said. "I'm sorry," Din felt compelled to add. Emiria opened her eyes. "Why," she said, "are you the one who took away my daughter?" "No," said Din, startled. Emiria looked up at him with clear eyes. "Then you have nothing to be sorry for," she said. "Magida has told me about you, Svaneta. You were not here in the years Bib Fortuna ruled over us." "No," said Din, "I wasn't." "So the blame is not yours," said Emiri. "It is Bib Fortuna's who is dead. It is the Zygerians who will be dead soon, yes?" "Yes," Din admitted. He didn't think that Boba and Fennec would let Jassa go alive. "I had always thought," Emiri said, voice quiet, "that Gela should have stayed closer to home. But Beat Anu had ambitions, and my daughter, well, I suspected what had happened when Gela vanished and strange men told me they owned the cantina, not Gela and Beat, but now we know." Din shifted on Emiri's front step, uncomfortable. He felt the urge to apologize again, but wasn't sure that Emiri would let him. He didn't know what else he could say. He had lost his kid. Only for a few weeks, but he still remembered that terror. The fear that had closed his throat, had paralyzed him, had kept him up at night while he frantically planned the job on Morak, then the attack on the light cruiser. "But I got my son back," he thought. "Emiri, Gela's gone. Maybe we can still find out what happened to her. Maybe she's still alive out there somewhere, but..." Emiri sighed, then offered Din a crooked smile. She wasn't at all like he'd thought she'd be. There was something strong in her, some inner heart of Beskar. Emiri looked delicate, looked fragile, but just like the Kuka birds picking their way through the river, Emiri had something sharp about her, too. "You're not here to talk to me about my Gela," Emiri said. "And I'm being rude. What can I help you with, Din Svaneta?" "Jaren," Din offered. But Emiri just waved a graceful hand. "Nora calls you that already, you know," she said. "What, Svaneta?" The word meant kinsman. On Ryloth, Twi'leks used it to refer to distant cousins or close clan allies. Emiri nodded. "She told us, all of us Tatu Ril, I mean, that if we ever found ourselves in trouble, we were to find you or Lord Fett." Din thought of the tapestry Nora had just hung up in the throne room and felt that sharp thing in his throat again. He swallowed around it.
I'm happy to help, he said sincerely.
Then I am happy to help you, Emir said. What do you need?
I'm looking for Gita, Din said. Is she home? Something sharpened in Emir's eyes, like a beak about to plunge below the water. Din winced.
I just want to talk to her, Din hurried to add.
Gita is Emir's last remaining child, he reminded himself. She won't be happy if I put Gita in danger. Well, in more danger than she's usually in, anyway.
I have some questions, that's all. We're trying to make sure that we caught or killed all of Jasa's, the Zygerian who was running Gela's place, her crew.
Oh, said Mary, relaxing a little. She frowned. Why do you think Gita might know anything? I never let her go there after Gela disappeared. It wasn't safe. I was...
She closed her mouth, shook her head.
I understand, said Din. But Gita, she knows a lot, Din said. And she's observant. She pays attention.
She does, Emiri admitted grudgingly. More than her Nasa friends, anyway. It is good that Ruli Blen is a good dancer. That girl doesn't have two thoughts to trade for Tipperu Tail.
Din held his tongue. He liked Ruli. She was sweet. Nothing like Gita, though, he thought. He could see Mary's point. Gita had warmed up to Din considerably since they'd been attacked together on the sand road, but with strangers she was standoffish and cool, wary of everyone.
You make a good point, Emiri allowed. She sighed. Gita is at her sister's cantina.
Gela's place. Emiri nodded. She didn't look very happy about it, either.
With Ruli and the Blen boys, she wanted to clean it up, Emiri explained.
Gela, my daughter...
She had to stop again, shaking her head, Laku trembling with some deep, painful emotion. Din thought that he understood that, too.
Gela loved that cantina, he said quietly.
Right?
Emiri looked up at him. She nodded.
Yes, she said. She did. How did you know?
She planted flowers, Din said. And Jasa, she left all of the Rilish art on the walls, the murals, the sculptures. I could tell that Gela loved it.
Gita doesn't love it like that, Emiri said. But she... I don't know. That's where she is. She gathered a band of Blen cousins and some of the other quarter children. They all went over together. I didn't want her to leave, not after what happened last time, but she's Ulkru, too. That girl, she does what she thinks she has to, and today she thought she had to clean out her sister's cantina.
Din nodded.
Thank you, he said.
Do you want me to bring them home? I don't have anywhere else to be until this evening.
She is working this evening, actually, said Emiri. She looked up at Din again, raising a delicate eyebrow. Would you mind
taking her to the palace? Din said. Now she can ride with me. I can bring her home, too, if you want.
Emiri gave Din a real smile then, wide and dimpled. She was beautiful when she smiled like that. Din wondered how many other people had seen her smile that way when she'd been a dancer in Jabba's court. Probably not many, he thought.
Thank you, Emiri said sincerely.
Nora was right about you, Din Svaneta. You are welcome here any time, Sama. Especially if you can keep Gita from running around like a wild thing.
I don't know about that, Din said, smiling too. But I can try.
Emiri reached up and patted the curve of Din's cheek, her fingers ringing sweet notes against his beskar.
Thank you, she repeated.
If you ever want to leave Lord Fett's side and come work for us down here, half the Tetu'ril would take you in.
Only half, Din said, hoping that Emiri could hear the smile in his voice.
The other half would make you marry their daughters first.
Emiri laughed.
I wouldn't wish Gita on anyone. She has a temper like a gutkur in the mornings.
Din thanked Emiri again for her help. She could just as easily have decided that she didn't want Din asking Gita questions after all, and sent him wandering around the quarter for the rest of the afternoon, then climbed back onto his speeder and made for the business district after all.
I'll find Dayeri later, he thought, rocking the speeder up now that he had a destination in mind. Mos Eisley wasn't all that sprawling, really, so within 10 minutes, Din was pulling up to the pink-painted walls of Gela's place again, wincing at the damage in the harsh sunlight. The cantina had looked bad enough the other night, door broken, walls pocked with blaster fire, all of Gela's flowers trampled over. It looked worse today. Din left his speeder a few buildings down and made his way up to Gela's place, taking in the worst of the damage. Guilt pricked underneath his breastbone. Gela loved this place, he thought, and we kind of destroyed it. Gela's place was still standing, but that was just about all that could be said for it. The flowers were all gone, trampled and broken, the windows were shattered, the pink walls were gray with smoke and burned carbon. No one had fixed the door yet, so Din could see into the cantina from the street. Imiri had told him the truth. Gita was inside, doing her best to clean up the debris from the fight Din had brought down on the cantina. She had bound her Leku back with a leather headband and was sweeping a heap of broken wood and shattered glass into a pile in the middle of the room. She was turned away from the door, so she didn't see Din coming in from the street. The inside of the cantina was just as much of a wreck as the outside. It looked even worse than it had when Din had stumbled back through the door with Jossa slung over her shoulder, with fresh blood on the floor and fresh carbon scoring the walls. It looked sadder, somehow. Defeated. It looks like it belongs in the gleaning, Din thought, not here. Din went up to the door and paused, peering inside. To his surprise, two Wookiee boys, Dayeri's other sons, were inside the cantina with Gita, both of them diligently scrubbing at the walls. Ruli was there, too, gathering up anything that looked like it might be salvageable, and her cousins Siolo and Yuna were moving around behind the bar, ducking between the cantina's main room and the kitchen with their arms full of large pieces of debris and broken furniture. Din sighed. We should have been more careful, he thought, guilt prickling insistently against his chest. It was an odd thing to think, because at the time Din had been too busy trying not to die, trying to keep Jossa from escaping, to worry about whether or not Gela's place stayed standing once the fighting was done. But maybe I should have worried. Seeing Gita there, Leku pulled back behind her forehead, determinedly sweeping up stray scraps of shattered wood and shards of glass, watching the two Wookiee boys scrub carbon off the walls and the rest of Gita's Twi'lek friends try to salvage whatever they could, made Din's heart twist in his chest. They're kids, he thought. And this place... For all Din knew, this cantina was all Gita had left of her sister. Imiri hadn't said otherwise. How many times did we have to do this, Din thought, thinking back to all of the times the covert had moved around when he'd been younger, the abandoned places the Alor or the elders had found. Din had swept up his fair share of someone else's ruined life. The treetop village on Kashyyyk, the broken Lucrehulk hull, the caves of Dantooine. Din pushed all of that out of his head. He had a job to do, a hunt to start if Gita had information for him. He cleared his throat softly and waited in the doorway until Gita looked up and saw him. She did, startling a little, her hands going tight around the broom handle for a second and her expression going blank before she realized who Din was. Then she relaxed. "Oh," she said, just like her mother had. "It's you." "It's me," Din agreed. He stayed in the doorway. One of the Wookiee boys, the taller of the two with fur a darker shade of gold than his brother's, looked up and warbled a hello. Din waved a little, then looked at Gita again. She looked younger than she ever had, younger even than the scared teenager she'd been when she'd tucked herself into Din's side after they'd been attacked on the road. She looked too small for this space. Her eyes were wide. Gita caught herself pretty quickly, though, staring at Din in confusion for a handful of seconds before blinking, shaking her head a little, and adopting her usual guarded expression. "We can leave if we're in the way," Gita said, gesturing at the Wookiee boys and her friends. "We thought that Lord Fett was done with... We thought he was done here," she added quickly. "What? No, no," Din said, catching on. "You're fine. I'm not here to chase you off." "Oh," said Gita, blinking. She lost some of her cool composure, warming to Din again. "What are you here for, then?"
"Looking for you, actually," said Din. "Your mother told me you'd be here." That got Gita to roll her eyes a little, though she had relaxed. She went back to her sweeping.
"My mother worries too much," said Gita. "I'm fine. I didn't come alone. Siolo and Yuna are here. So's Dinaktar and Kansek and Iju. We're all fine."
Din blinked, sorting the names out in his head. He knew Siolo and Yuna. Kansek was a Wookiee name. It meant something along the lines of climbs trees, though Din's Shriwook was even rougher than his Rill. And Din would bet that Iju was too, which sorted Daeri's sons out.
"Dinaktar?" Din asked. He hadn't heard that name before.
Gita stopped sweeping and looked around, frowning a little, then flicked an irritated hand.
"He's probably out back," she said. "He's, well,
he was one of Glia's friends. He still looks in on Mama and me, helps out when he can."
Another Twi'lek then, Din thought, nodding. One of Gita's friends from the quarter.
"Glia?" Din asked. That was the last name he didn't recognize.
"Wait," he thought to himself. "That's not true. I do know that name."
Ruli was packing them up now, taking all of Gela's art from the walls, but there had been 5 brass discs hanging on the wall of the hallway between the cantina's main room and the stairs. 1 for each of Ryloth's moons.
"Angela," Din thought, counting them in his head. "Angida, Angiri, Angari, Anglie."
Ymiri had named at least 2 of her children after Ryloth's moons. Gita's expression flickered, wavering from her usual cool composure toward something more vulnerable.
"My brother," she said.
Din winced.
"Gela's twin," Gita continued, starting to sweep methodically again.
There wasn't much left around her to sweep up, but the work seemed to calm her down some, so Din didn't say anything about it.
"He was taken when I was a kid, before I even started dancing."
"You're still a kid," Din thought. Something, protectiveness, rising in his chest. "I'm sorry," he said. Gita just shrugged.
"It happens," she says. "At least we knew where he ended up. He was sold into the fighting pits on Narkanji. Did pretty well there, too, for a while. He used to send us a little bit of clink when he could."
"Used to?" Din winced again.
"He's the only one we ever heard from once he went down the Sorrow Lanes," Gita continued.
"Gela, Gari, Giri."
Gita shook her head, Laku swaying a little. She smiled at Din crookedly. She looked very much like her mother. "Though we know what happened to Gela now, thanks to you. I'd do just anything to find out what happened to my family, but you figured this one out, at least."
Din wasn't sure how to respond to that, so he didn't say anything at all. Gita had never talked much about her siblings, aside from telling Din that they were all gone. She hadn't needed to, really. Din had put the pieces together on his own. Gita's story was a common one in this part of the galaxy.
"Kark," Din thought, looking around the wrecked cantina. "Almost everyone in here probably has a variation on that story. Kansek and Iju's mother had gone to Boa for help in recovering her youngest child, just like Ymiri had. Siolo and Yuna were part of the Ahra, spying on the Masters and working in the Freedom Movement. Gita was, too. How many of their friends and family spent their last night on Tatooine underneath this room?" Din wondered. "How many of them passed through Jass's claws before being shipped off down the Sorrow Lanes?"
Din cleared his throat a little. Gita looked at him askance, head tilted. "Jassa, she'll be dead soon," he said. At Gita's blank look, he elaborated. She was the one who ran the... who took the cantina from your sister," he said. "She's... Fennec will kill her. Once Fennec gets what she needs out of Jassa, she'll kill her. Jassa won't be able to do this to anyone else." He left out what Fennec would do to Jassa before she killed the Zygerian. What kind of information Fennec was trying to pry out from between Jassa's teeth. Gita didn't need to hear the details.
Gita brightened. "She will?"
Din nodded. Good, said Gita with satisfaction.
She gave the mostly cleared floor a particularly aggressive sweep.
She...
Gita stopped again, shook her head.
Mama wouldn't let us come here after Gela disappeared, she said. Me and Gari and Giri. She still had all three of us then. Glia was already gone. We wanted to come here and look for Gela. Beat tried to look for her, but he disappeared too, and after that... Mama wouldn't let me come over to the business district until you came and raided this place.
Beat Anu, right, Din said, your sister's husband?
Gita nodded, pointing at the wrecked mural behind the bar. Most of it had been burned and scored by the fighting, but Din could still make out the painted shapes of two Twi'leks, a man and a woman.
He's the one who bought this place for her, Gita explained. He was some kind of mechanic, had a little chop shop down the street from here. He bought her freedom, too. He saw her dancing for Bit Fortuna one day and paid half a year's wages for her freedom.
And he disappeared after your sister did? Din asked.
Gita nodded.
I probably know where he disappeared to, too, Din thought, thinking of the cool, dark cave underneath Gela's place, the chains on the wall.
After we lost Beat, Mama wouldn't let any of us come over here anymore, Gita said. I used to be angry about it, but... I get it now. Still, it's good that the Slimo who took my sister will be dead soon. Herleku twitched angrily.
Din could only nod.
So what are you doing here? He asked.
Gonna take over the cantina?
Din wouldn't mind seeing Gela's place patched up again, the walls repainted, the garden replanted outside. It would be nice, proof that new things were happening on Tatooine, in Mos Eisley. But Gita just grimaced, shaking her head.
Me run a cantina? No, she said, snorting a little.
Why not? You do all right running the bar at the palace, Din pointed out. Gita wasn't as practiced at running the bar as Nora was, but she was still young. She'd pick it up quickly.
That's because Nora orders all the spatchka and haggles with the delivery crews every day, said Gita, sounding amused.
I don't know how she does it, all those numbers. Gita affected a shudder. Din snorted. He didn't buy Gita's shudder for a second.
You'd do fine, he repeated firmly.
Gita looked up at Din. Her expression was strange, half distant like it usually was, but also half open.
That's not why I came here, she finally said.
To run this place or open it again or anything like that, I don't want it. I just wanted to clean it up a little. Take back some of Gela's stuff, that's all.
Din could understand that, too.
Besides, Gita said, changing the subject, you didn't come over here to ask me about the cantina, did you? What do you need?
Din sighed. Gita was sharp.
Can we talk outside? He asked. I don't want to bother your friends.
And I don't know if I can trust them, he thought.
Siolo and Yuna were probably trustworthy, and the Wookiees were just kids. But Din didn't want to let more beings in on his search for the rest of Joss's crew and Joss's spy than he had to.
Gita looked at Din for a long moment, then nodded.
Hey, Ruli, she called. I'm going to be out front with our Batran here. Shout if you need anything, okay?
Ruli, who was engrossed in some of the sculptures she had pried off the wall, only twitched a Leku in acknowledgement. Gita followed Din outside, then looked up at him once they were clear of the front door, hands on her hips.
Well, she prompted, direct as always.
Din couldn't help but smile. Gita, he thought, for the first time, would make a good Mandalorian.
I'm looking for information, he said quietly, pitching his voice so low that no one inside the cantina could overhear him. He didn't want to drag any of the other kids. And they were all kids, Kansek and Yiju and Ruli, even Siolo and Yuna, into this if he didn't have to.
Gita cocked her head. Information on what? She asked.
On this, Din said, gesturing at Gela's place. On the operation here, where I want to make sure that we got all of Jess's crew, he said. I don't need to tell her that Jassa hasn't talked yet. That we still don't know how many people Jassa had running slaves for her. That wasn't something that Gita needed to hear. We got a fair few of them, Din added when he saw Gita's eyes widen. But, I don't know, I want to be sure. Boba, Lord Fat, he corrected himself, since Gita always referred to Boba that way, wants to make sure that everyone knows no slavers are welcome in Mos Eisley anymore. I want to run down anyone who still contributes to the Sarra trade. Gita's expression softened a little. You're trying to help again, Batran, she said. She sounded fond when she said it. Din shrugged, a little uncomfortable. He couldn't help but think he should have tried harder. Boba had outlawed the Sarra trade months ago. Din should have been enforcing it. They all should have been enforcing it. If Din, Fennec, and Boba had been hunting slavers from the start, they would have found Jassa much sooner. Would have run her off back to Hutt Space or killed her if she hadn't fled. If we'd paid more attention to the Sarra trade, Din thought with a pang, we could have avoided the entire raid on the palace, or at the very least, we could have delayed Gorga's timetable a little more. Bought ourselves more time to prepare to dig in. Din couldn't go back and make himself pay closer attention to Mos Eisley and the laws that were broken there, but he could at least do this. Try to make it right now. Have you seen anyone around the quarter who shouldn't be there? Din asked. Any outlanders? Weequay in particular, though Jassa had a few humans on a crew, Aduroth too. Plenty of outlanders come through the quarter, Gita said, tilting her head to think hard. You have anything else I can go on? Din started to shake his head, then paused. Anyone, he said slowly, that you might have seen in both the quarter and the palace. That made Gita drop short. Her eyes widened. What do you mean? She asked. She sounded nervous. Din couldn't blame her, not really. Gita had come to Nora for help because she'd been followed on her way home. Someone had followed her from the palace to the quarter. And that someone tried to kill her, Din thought. It didn't matter that Din had probably been the real target of that attack on the sand road. Gita had been there and she had almost died too. Din didn't blame her for being afraid. I've seen thousands of people at the palace, Gita said, sounding uncertain. Are you... Her voice had gone higher with fear. Din held up a hand, trying to calm her down. Fierce protectiveness twinged low in his belly. He didn't know when that had happened, but... Gita's one of us, he thought. She hadn't made it to Nora's tapestry, or at least Din hadn't seen her on there, but... She was still part of the outfit. That made her one of Din's people. He didn't have a tribe anymore, a clan, a covert, but... But I have this, he thought. Gita was part of it. Din would protect her. I'm asking, he said, choosing his words carefully. Because Jassa, the Zygerian, was never at the palace. None of us ever saw her there. But someone was still feeding Jassa information, and she passed that information on to Gorga. That's why we were attacked on the sand road. Gorga knew who I was. He told his mercs to try to take me out because he knew that I was on Boba's side. Gita's eyes were round as black melons. And you think someone who worked for Jassa was at the palace? Her Leku were twitching anxiously. You think there was a spy? Fennec says that there are always spies, Din said. But this one is or was one Fennec didn't know about. We might be on a wild nerf chase here. We might have killed just a spy the other night, but I just want to be sure. And you think it's someone in the palace? Has to be, Din said. Does anyone stick out to you? A stranger who might have come to the palace a few times?
someone who was in or near the quarter before someone, a friend of yours, maybe, or one of Ruli's cousins, or Kansek Niju's little brother, went missing. Gita bit her lip and tilted her head up, clearly thinking hard.
I'm not sure, she said.
Her laku were still twitching.
I only see the folks who come up to the bar, you know, usually anyway, she said. But strangers in the quarter, I don't know either. There's always Utmiani hanging around, but most of them don't even look at us, really. I know Kansek's little brother Erishur went missing a few weeks ago, but I don't remember any strangers around the quarter. I can ask around, though, she added quickly when she saw Din's shoulders drop a little. Mama doesn't like it when I wander around even in the quarter.
Din supposed that he understood that. Imiri had already lost Gita once. If she lost Gita again, Din would of course go looking for her, but if Gita was sent down a sorrow lane before Din could find her, finding her again would be difficult. He nodded slowly.
But Ruli's got so many cousins around that her mother's not as worried about Ruli disappearing, Gita said. She's out and around the quarter all the time, Siolo and Yuna, too. I can ask them if they've seen any strangers.
Would you? Din asked. He grimaced underneath his helmet. I would, but they trust you more.
Gita rolled her eyes a little. They trust you fine, she said, but I can ask if you want. Some of the Chake keep track of everyone who comes and goes.
The ants? Din asked, translating the word.
Gita smiled.
Yeah, you know, the old women, the ones whose kids are all grown up or all gone. Nobody notices them, but they're all over the place. They keep an eye on things.
Like Jita, Din said, understanding. Like Ushib.
Is that Tuscan for aunt? Gita asked.
It means grandmother, Din said.
Gita shrugged.
Close enough, then. What did you want me to ask?
Din thought for a moment. If there have been any strangers around, he said slowly. A day or two before someone, anyone like Erishur or even you, when you were taken, disappeared. Or if anyone's heard anything, knows anything about how Jassa's outfit operated. If there are other smuggling rings like hers.
Gita paled at the mention of her own abduction, but nodded.
I can do that, she said.
Get as much detail as you can, Din told her. Not just species, but what kind of clothes they were wearing, if they spoke a different language, anything like that.
And then you'll... What? Gita asked. Hunt them down?
Yes, said Din, firmly.
Gita looked up at him for a minute, still pale, but she nodded.
I can do that, she said.
Be careful, Din warned her. Don't ask anyone you don't know, and take someone with you. Someone like one of Ruli's cousins, or maybe the older Wookiee boy.
Kansek? Gita snorted. He wouldn't hurt a Kirik fly. But Siolo or Yuna'd go with me if I asked them to.
Good, said Din, relieved. I'm looking for anyone who could have come into the palace, too. Someone that Fennec or I wouldn't have noticed, okay?
Gita nodded, expression set, despite the way her laku were still twitching.
I can do that, she said.
If you run into trouble, come find me, Din said. Or Fennec Shand. Or even Lord Fett. He'll help you if you run into trouble or find someone who scares you.
Gita nodded again. I believe you, she said sincerely. She managed a thin smile up at him. I don't know, you can't be a Twi'lek under that armor, you don't have any laku, but you're all right for whatever you are.
I'm human, Din said, surprised. The feeling of protectiveness was surging in his chest again. He had never... Before Grogu, Din hadn't been like this, so determined to protect beings outside of his tribe. But he wanted to protect Gita.
Gita raised an eyebrow.
Really, she said. Most humans I know are scugs. You're not like that.
Din hesitated, then looked down the street past Gita. It was still afternoon, still hot and stifling, so no one was moving in the streets. Before he could change his mind, he released the seals on his helmet and tugged it off, smoothing his hair down a little. He tucked his helmet underneath his arm, then looked down at Geeta with his own eyes. She was staring up at him, openly shocked. Din gestured at himself, trying not to feel too exposed.
"I've already taken my helmet off in front of half the planet," he told himself irritably. "And I'm Darmanda. I'm fine with being Darmanda. I need to get used to this. And Geeta, she calls me Manetta."
"See?" he said, glad that he'd taken the time to trim down his hair and beard that morning. "Human."
"Oh," said Geeta, flicking her eyes over Din's face. You're not scary at all," she said.
Din paused, eyebrows lifting. Geeta flushed a deep orange, Leku going stiff with embarrassment.
"I meant, you're plenty scary," she tried. "But, I don't know, I thought you'd be meaner looking, like Lord Fett, but you don't look mean at all."
"I thank you," Din said, completely thrown. He was honestly a little insulted on Boba's behalf. Boba didn't look mean. He was just scarred, that was all. He had a reputation from his days under Jabba, but Din didn't think that Boba looked mean. Intimidating in his Beskar gum, maybe. That was half the point of Beskar.
"That's not what..." "Okay," said Geeta, blushing an even deeper shade.
Din felt himself turning red around the ears, too, and had to resist the urge to slam his helmet back over his head in self-defense.
"Oh, I'm sorry. That's my fault," said Geeta. "I'm just surprised, that's all."
"Why?" Din asked, curling his fingers underneath the rim of his helmet. Geeta actually took a second to answer, which was probably a good sign.
"Because, I don't know, the way everyone talks about you, you killed a crate dragon, right?"
Din nodded.
"And you're a real Mandalorian bounty hunter, just like Lord Fett. And you're Ba'chan. People talk about you like you're, I don't know, someone out of a desert tale."
Din froze.
"But you're just a man," said Geeta, still looking at Din with wide eyes. "Aren't you?"
Slowly, Din nodded again. He thought that that was the right thing to do. He wasn't a spirit tale or a desert story. He wasn't anything out of the ordinary. He was just
a Mandalorian, he thought, who isn't a Mandalorian at all anymore. But maybe there weren't ever many Mandalorians like me. Maybe that's why everyone seemed so surprised.
Din had always lived his life by the creed, and he'd grown up surrounded by other Mandalorians who'd lived exactly the same way. Din wasn't special. He wasn't something mythical or unusual, not among his own tribe.
"But I'm not among my tribe anymore," he thought. "So maybe I am unusual, if most of the other Mandalorians of the way, my way, are gone."
"Sorry," Geeta added, wincing. "I didn't mean... You're perfectly nice. It's just you're not what I expected, that's all." Din recovered a little, slipping his helmet back on over his head. "Better?" he asked, aiming for a joke. Geeta shook her head.
"The same now," she said, "now that I know what you look like under there. I just mean... I was expecting a Jval, you know, as odd as that sounds."
"A fire spirit?" Din asked, thrown again. The Tuscans called their fire spirits Harali, but it didn't surprise Din that the Twi'leks had a similar creature in their stories. Ryloth was a desert, just like Tatooine.
"Or something like it," Geeta admitted. "A ghoul or a rock. That's how everyone talks about you. Like you're something that Lord Fett or Cobb Vanth conjured up out of the desert."
"You know Cobb Vanth?" Din asked, latching onto the part of the conversation that he could process.
"Of course," said Geeta, her blush fading some. "Everyone in the Quarter knows him, and he knows you, right? He was in the Quarter a few months ago, said that if any of us had a problem with Lord Fett, we should tell you about it because you'd fix it. So we all kind of I don't know. You ever hear the story of the slave and the sorcerer?
No, said Dan honestly.
Gita smiled.
You should ask Nora to tell you sometime, she said. She's a good storyteller. You'd like it, I think. You might understand why some of us thought you a fire spirit.
But I'm not, Din said, uncomfortable.
Gita had no way of knowing it, but Fennec had said almost the exact same thing to Din. She'd said that Din, with his spear and the darksaber, looked like something out of a story.
No, Gita said, smiling again. You're not. You're Manetta, yeah. Just as mortal as the rest of us.
I am, Din said, making himself relax a little, even though the hairs on the back of his neck were still standing up.
Sorry, Gita added. I didn't mean to upset you.
It's fine, Din said. He tilted his helmet down at her. You just caught me by surprise, is all.
So did you, Gita pointed out.
Din huffed. Fair, he allowed. But I meant what I said, Gita. Please be careful. I'm not part of the Ahra, not really. I can help, I don't mind, but I haven't spent enough time in the quarter to know who its strangers are. If you've seen anyone, or if any of your friends have seen anyone.
I'll tell you as soon as I find out, Gita promised. Her eyes glittered.
I want the huts gone too, she said. That's the only way things are going to change here. I don't mind being in a little bit of danger if it means that they'll finally be gone.
We're doing what we can, Din said.
She flashed him another smile.
I know, she said.
She looked up, taking in the position of the suns, then frowned.
It's going to be evening soon, she said. I'm working tonight. I need to...
I know, Din said. Your mother told me. I can take you to the palace if you want. Gita rolled her eyes.
My mother probably told you to take me even if I didn't want you to, she said.
She asked me to keep an eye on you, Din admitted. You don't have to ride with me if you don't want to. Gita gave him a flat look.
But you'll follow behind me if I don't ride with you, right?
Din just shrugged. Gita sighed.
Give me a few minutes to finish up here, she said, and then we can leave.
I can help, Din said.
Gita smiled. Good, she said. Come on, then.
Despite Gita's concern, there were still a few hours left between now and the start of evening court. Din wanted to get into the palace before all of the crowds arrived, but other than that, he had nowhere else to be. He didn't know anyone else in the quarter who'd promised to help him as readily as Gita had, and though he still needed to talk to Daeri, he settled for talking to her sons while he helped Siolo, Yuna, and Dinak Tot, who turned out to be a green-skinned male Twi'lek only a decade or so younger than Din, move some of the heavier things around the bar. There was more to salvage in the kitchens than there was in the main room itself. Once Ruli had finished packing up all of Gela's artwork, Din carried it outside and helped Dinak and Yuna secure it to a speeder. Once all of the heavy lifting was done, Din grabbed a sponge and a bucket of soapy water and started to help Kansek, who was just as shy and gentle as Gita had made him out to be, and Yiju, who was considerably more outgoing, scrub some of the carbon off the walls. They took a lot of the mural with them while they scrubbed, but Gita didn't complain. Yiju was more than happy to talk to Din once he realized that Din understood Shiwook. He talked a click a minute about his brother Erishur and his life in Mos Eisley. Kansek was more reserved. When Din asked both brothers, as gently as he could, if they'd seen any strangers around their small house just before Erishur disappeared, Kansek had only shaken his head. But they were both hard-working boys, and by the time the suns were truly starting to set, evening cool breaking out over the streets of Mos Eisley and its residents starting to stir again, most of the worst of the carbon scoring had been scrubbed off the walls. Gita found Din then and linked her elbow through his, like she had when Din had walked her and Ruli home a few weeks ago.
"Thanks for all your help, everyone," she said sincerely, looking at all of her friends. "Gela would have appreciated it."
Din had flushed again behind his helmet, glad that he'd put it back on.
"Don't worry about it," he said gruffly. "Should have done it months ago."
Gita didn't have anything to say to that. She just set her broom aside, dusted her hands off on her pants, and called in the rest of her makeshift cleaning crew to let them know she was leaving with Din. Everyone said their goodbyes. Din let Gita drag him out to his speeder and waited until she had climbed up behind him, settling herself on the back of his speeder before taking off again. Most of the bacta on the back of Din's legs had worn off by now. The ride back to the palace was distinctly less comfortable than the ride out to the city had been. The pain buzzed on the tip of Din's tongue, edging on distraction. But the trip passed quickly enough, and Din and Gita made it to the palace before evening had well and truly set in, ahead of most of the crowd of petitioners, visitors, and rabble. Gita said goodbye to Din at the top of the throne room steps, branching off down a separate hallway to find Nora before her shift started. Din made his way down into the throne room. To his relief, Boba was there, perched on his throne, whole and alive. Din's shoulders dropped when he saw him. Fennec was over at the bar again, though she'd put her map of the palace away. Din couldn't tell from her expression whether or not she'd gotten jostled a crack, and resolved to ask her before evening court truly began. The tapestry behind Boba's throne looked even more impressive in the dimmer evening light. The sun slashing through the windows turned the throne room orange and red, and the shadows were growing in the corners. All of that made the throne look impressive. Boba always looks impressive, Din thought, crossing the room. But with the tapestry... With the tapestry, Boba looked like a proper king. Boba, fully armored, helmet on, looked up as Din approached. His shoulders dropped, too. Jerrica, he said, his voice warm even through the vocoder. His voice was pitched low, so none of the passing servo droids or guards could hear the endearment. Din's heart kicked to hear it anyway. No trouble in the city. None, Din reported. No trouble in the desert? None, Boba agreed. He didn't get up from the throne, but he waved a hand, inviting Din up onto the dais with him. Really, though, Din said, once he was close enough that he wouldn't be overheard. All fine. How are the Shaking Mountain? There were no fresh dents or scratches in Boba's armor that Din could see, which Din hoped meant that Boba hadn't gotten into any fights while he'd been out in the sands. Boba's position was relaxed, too. He wasn't sitting like he was injured. He certainly wasn't sitting as gingerly as Din had, riding the speeder back to the palace. Good, Din thought. They're useful enough, Boba said. They've been tracking smugglers' bands that are coming through the territory. Din frowned. Smugglers. Hutune trying to hit most Pelgar's crew, I think, Boba said. Kirsha Littleman was there. She said that no one's attacked the town directly, but they've had some trouble out in the canyon lands. Rival crews looking to poach the goods before they go through the town. Din frowned, even though Boba couldn't see it. Littlemoon and Vanth had mentioned enterprising smugglers before. Vanth had picked a few off in the canyons, he'd said. Anyone hurt? Paz and the kids were in Mos Pelgo, if there were smugglers closing in. Boba shook his head. No, he said. Not yet, anyway. Little Moon can handle herself, and the Shaking Mountain have been picking off anyone stupid enough to try crossing their territory. That's why their chief wanted to talk to me. He wanted to make sure I don't care if he kills a smuggler or six if they're on his Tuskball. And do you? Din heard the smile in Boba's voice. Not particularly, Boba said. How about you? How's Mos Eisley? Quiet, Din reported, then filled Boba in on all he'd learned while he'd been in the city. He relayed Gita's offer to ask around the quarter, which Boba approved of, and listened while Boba offered his own insights and details about his trip into the desert. Apparently the smugglers that had been creeping closer to Mos Pelgo still hadn't figured out how to navigate their way through the overlapping Tusken territories of the Dune Sea. None of them had even gotten within sight of the town. But Paz is there, Din thought. He deliberately tensed, flexing his toes in his boots, to let another rush of pain sweep over him and settle his nerves. The throne room was gradually filling up around them. The band came in and started to tune up in the corner, the Beshnikel oddly flat today. More guards came and took up their posts around the room. Gita made it to the bar and started serving drinks, and Fennec stood, starting to make her rounds. The routine settled Din. I know this place, he couldn't help but think. I know these people. There might still be a spy in their ranks, just waiting to find a new go-between to get information to Gorga, but Din wasn't too worried about a spy. A good spy wouldn't want to blow their cover by launching an attack, especially not if they were on their own. That sense of knowing, comfort, safety, understanding had survived Gorga's first raid. And Din and Fennec together had managed to deal Gorga a significant blow, even if it was only temporary. It would take Gorga some time, hopefully, to find a replacement for Jassa. "He won't attack again anytime soon," Din assured himself, still listening to Bobo talk about the Shaking Mountain with half an ear. "We've got some time to fortify. Gita'll ask around, I'll keep hunting. Bobo will keep ruling, and Fennec will keep running things. We'll be fine." Bobo seemed to think so too, because his mood was buoyant and warm, still carried by the slow, lazy morning he and Din had shared. Din was fiercely glad of that. Some of his own peace had been eroded by his trip into Mos Eisley, but Bobo was still in good spirits. Din left him at the throne once the shadows began to deepen, true evening settling in, and Din took up his usual post by the stairs. The room was filling steadily, the usual crowd of other beings thronging in, and Bobo got court started without any trouble. Fennec replaced Din by the throne, perching at Boba's side like she normally did, with her helmet pulled down, only her eyes visible. Din settled in for the evening, comforted by the familiar routine and the dull pain in his thighs. That comfort lasted less than an hour. Bobo had managed to hear petitions from several visitors. He solved two water rights disputes, took on a new protection contract for a poltabean farmer out at the edge of the Great Dune Sea, and was in the middle of setting up a new contract with a spice smuggler when Cusco Reeves walked into the room. The second Din caught sight of her blue and white armor, the owl sigil stamped on her shoulders, any sense of comfort or peace abandoned Din immediately. She almost made it past Din without Din catching her. He hadn't been expecting her at all, so seeing her threw him entirely. He just stared for a moment as she passed him by. She came down the stairs, fully armored, helmet on and Beskar gleaming, and made to go straight up to the throne. Din recovered within a split second, reaching out and catching Cusco by the elbow. She startled, predictably, and went for a knife strapped to the inside of her wrist. Din only tightened his grip, ready to block a blade if he had to. "Oh," said Cusco, her voice muffled by her helmet. She let go of her knife. "There you are, I figured you would be around." "What are you doing here?" Din hissed. Shock lit him up. "You're not... do you have business here?" None of the Night Owls had ever come down to Tatooine, not while Din had been here. Din checked the stairs again, alarm mounting, expecting to see Axe Wolves or Bo-Katan, but fortunately it looked like Cusco was alone. "It's a free galaxy, isn't it?" said Cusco. Her tone cooled. She shook Din's hand off her arm, and he let her go, still numb with shock. He'd forgotten just about everything else, the faint pain in his thighs, the vague sense of comfort, any lingering peace he'd found in bed with Bobo that morning. All of it evaporated like a mirage in the suns. "And I'm here for you, Jaren," Cusco added. "Me?" said Din. "What? Oh." Cold sweat broke out down his back. "The Gathering of Mandalorians." Din had entirely forgotten about that. He'd meant to tell Bobo, to invite Bobo, since Bobo had a right to be there too, since Din didn't want to go on his own. But between the raid on Gela's place and waiting to be punished, Bo-Katan Kryze's Gathering of Mandalorians had fallen to the back of Din's mind. "I was going to tell Bobo," Din thought, alarm rising. "But I wanted to tell Paz first, and then Paz and I fought, and then Bobo and I argued, and then there was the hunt for Jassa, and..." And Din had just forgotten. He had been so determined to crack Jassa's network that he'd forgotten about his promise to Kryze about her quest entirely. "That's soon," he said. Cusco stared at him some more. "I know," she said, slowly, like she thought Din had taken a head injury recently. "It's in 4 days. That's why I'm here. We've been trying to reach you." "Reach me?" Din looked down at his gauntlet, then swore. My comlink, he thought. It was still broken. Aside from the 3 nights Din had spent in his own room, away from Bobo,
Din hadn't been that far from either Boba or Fennec in weeks. He hadn't needed to fix his comlink. He had a comms array in the Kirik Fly, but Din hadn't set foot on the ship since he'd come back from the light cruiser after the raid. He hadn't even thought to check.
Yeah, Cusca said, sounding distinctly annoyed now. Like Din had done all this, ignored his comms, forced Cusca to come out here, on purpose.
No one's been able to reach you, and Lady Kreese wants to go over a few things with you before the meeting, so...
She stopped.
Din froze, too, because Boba had seen Cusca Reeves. He'd come down off his throne and was now standing just a few feet away, shoulders back, visor gleaming. Every eye in the court was on Din and Cusca.
Kirk, Din thought.
Boba didn't like other Mandalorians.
Boba didn't like Cusca. The last time they'd met, they'd come to blows.
Kirk, Kirk, Kirk.
Boba, he started. But it was too late. Boba had already heard Din and Cusca talking.
What? Said Boba, very softly.
Meeting.